I need to stick an alarm. No, whatever. But say then, here we go. So, can someone just tell me when it's 12:45? Tell me about 5 minutes before. So, apropos of today's topic, which is traveling in space, I was preparing the shiur, I was preoccupied mentally going through the middle of the bus, and I spaced out. I found that I got off the wrong bus stop, and then I got on the wrong bus, and got off the wrong bus stop of the wrong bus. So I really felt like I had been orbiting Yerushalayim for a couple of hours. It took me 2 hours to get here instead of one. But so, Jews in space. That's all I have to say. No. Obviously, very interesting discussion. And what's difficult about it, of course, is that how much precedence can we possibly find? You know, when a posuk wants to pass on a shaila, then you have to have some sort of either a very concrete svara, or it makes perfect sense, it has to be that this, that, the other, or you need precedence. Now, there happens to be precedence here, and that's the precedence of keeping mitzvos in the Arctic Circle, which is, of course, not exactly the same, but it's at least one step to go. But before we get into the halachic technicalities, a few interesting details. Of course, when everyone talks about Jews in space, people think of Ilan Ramon, who was the first Israeli astronaut in space, but he was definitely not the first Jew in space. We've had a long tradition of Jews in space. There is a Wikipedia page called Jewish Astronauts. They have to be careful, though, because whenever someone is called Jewish, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's halachically Jewish, and a bunch of them are only whatever you would have called Jewish, but have Jewish fathers and not Jewish mothers. But the actual first, the record for the first Jewish astronaut in space goes all the way back to 1969, a Russian astronaut called Boris Volynov, and he was actually discriminated against, and he was sidetracked, and he was put off missions for about five times for being a Jew, and then he finally made it, and he's on a stamp, a Russian stamp from 50 years ago, so he was pretty early on in the game. We had a Jewish astronaut. Although he didn't seem to have any halachic queries, he probably wasn't religious or wasn't able to practice religion. The first American Jewish astronaut was a female, so she got it to them, very well known, Judith Resnick, and she went up in 1984 on Discovery, and then she crashed and died in 1985 on the Challenger. So Ilan Ramon wasn't the first Jewish astronaut to accomplish that. I'll try to keep the jokes likey. But the first time we had some sort of halachic context was a few interesting things. We know that Ilan Ramon had a keen interest in keeping some mitzvot, even though he wasn't religious. He felt a lot of national and Jewish pride. And he consulted, of course, who else but the local Chabad Rebbe, who consults all the mass questions, and he sent the questions. Ilan Ramon is very keen on making Kiddush in space, and he wanted to dafka make it during Israel time. That's a bit of a problem, of course, when we get further on. We'll discuss, is there at all halachic time in space? Does it depend on what you're doing in space? And if there is, how in the world do you determine what it is? But he was very adamant to making Kiddush during Shabbos Israel time, and we'll see that one posek many years later, after it was no longer relevant for him, did pask him that he can set his time based on Israel time, but that's for later on. Fascinating point, I just found out yesterday, after the crash, Ilan Ramon was in 2003, the spacecraft crashed at 90 kilometers above Earth, and of course everyone died. 2 months later, in the winter, in a rainy season, a 60-page diary was found, some field in the middle of nowhere, and he had written a diary, a journal, a personal journal, and it survived. It survived the explosion, and it survived 2 months in the winter, and it was just found in a field, and it was brought to Israel by his wife, and she sent it to the special department in Israeli police. The person deciphered it, reconstructed it. The pages were still there. They were lightly charred and wet, and they're now displayed in a museum. Some of them are online, you can see them. And one of the pages was handwritten Kiddush with Nekudos. He copied it down in his own handwriting with Nekudos, and that was the intention to save in space. So that's pretty awesome. Other interesting Jewish artifacts that were in space. So we had an astronaut in 1985 called Jeffrey Hoffman, and he took a mezuzah, which he velcroed onto the can't nail it in, and he velcroed it. And that mezuzah actually, oh man, this would be much better as a PowerPoint, but I'll use my phone as the PowerPoint. But you can see these mezuzahs. This mezuzah now is on the... It's the mezuzah as you walk into the Science Museum in Israel. It's to the right. So if you ever go there, look to the right, keep it up in the Science Museum. It's an interesting looking mezuzah. It looks for some reason like it's in some sort of ancient candle. I don't know why he chose that. Now let's find it. Here it is. I'll pass it around. Where are you, mezuzah? There. This is his mezuzah. It looks like in some sort of ancient Israel card. A much funkier mezuzah. He actually also took up a talis that was weighted. It's So he can wear talis in space when he had Barry Waiters. And he took a Chanukiah, but of course he couldn't light it because... David Wolf, another astronaut, Jewish astronaut in 1993, took a dreidel on Hanukkah and spinned it, according to his claim, for an hour and a half on a single spin. So MMY spins next year, maybe we can spit it up a bit. And that's definitely, I think, a world record for spinning a... for spinning a menorah. Then we had Garrett spinning. He could probably spin a menorah too. An astronaut in 2008 called Garrett Reisman. It was 60 years of Israel. It was a nice, nice, what looks like a selfie of him from inside the space shuttle looking outside holding the Israeli thing. That's quite nice. And then, here's a cool one. In 2008, Greg Feigenthoff. He took up an Apollo 11 mezuzah. It's pretty much, he had an Israeli artist who made a spaceship-shaped mezuzah that went up there with him, and that's cool. Another fact, not really Jewish, but based on Jewish, which is in 1968, in the Apollo 8, they transmitted, they read out the first 10 psukim of the Torah from space. Said, "We have a message from you. In the beginning, God created the world." And that's pretty awesome. Anyway, so the question, even if it wasn't relevant, obviously, you've met Jews and rabbis before. They're going to discuss it no matter how relevant or irrelevant it is. And, you know, since we're living in the future now, 2020, so we need to have a vision for the future. Now. A lot of 2020 vision jokes. But we have to discuss this. So, as I said, the only precedence that... Oh, should give that source sheets, no? You'll be surprised how much literature there is. The Jewish halachic literature about mitzvos in space started quite early on, after the moon landing. But then it was quite minimal. There were a few articles published in some former journals. But it was quite minimal. And some shocking statements were said, which I'll quote soon. But then much later, during the Ilan Ramon episode in 2003, when it was actually a local mindset for someone who was asking a local rabbi, letters were sent out to different Israel, to America, to Paschim. So then, already we have some serious articles that were written. Rav Bleich has a long piece about this in Contemporary Halachic Problems. And this piece that I'm giving you now, these are 4 pages out of a 100-page, what do you call it, Sefer Kuntres, written by Rav Levi Yitzchak Halperin, who was the head of the Institution of Science and Technology, and he wrote a 100-page Sefer about this. So if you want any of the other sources, we're going to quote every source by name because we only have a certain amount of time. And we'll have different time. Maybe we'll be Zohar for space time. We'll have a bit longer. But if you want any of the other sources that I quote today, references, please, I'll send it to you. Be in touch with me. But I'm giving you this because it has in it most of the sources quoted, most of the opinions, most of the options laid out. So this is what I'm going to work with. That's from the Sefer Im Yisak Shamayim, If I Go to Heavens, based on the Pasuk by Rav Halperin. So, pretty much everyone that discussed this question started off by saying the closest thing to it that we have precedence for is keeping time-based mitzvos in the North and South Pole, or above and below the Arctic and Antarctic Circle. There aren't that many people that live in the Southern Pole because there aren't many countries there, but above the Arctic Circle there are plenty of people that live. There are a bunch of countries. We'll talk about them soon. And that's what was discussed as early as 500 years ago. The poskim discussed. Most of the material we have is from about 200 years ago. Two of the most famous sources upon which it's all based is the Yaivitz's comment in Moruk Tziah's commentary on the Tur, and the Tiferet Yisrael commentary on the Mishnayos, who spoke about it. And they both spoke about Jews that go above the Arctic Circle to do what? They go whaling. That was what seemed to have led the Jews to the Northern Pole. Is that a nice job for a nice Jewish boy? Who knows? But they went whaling, and that led them. So this is 500 years worth of Torah, and they discussed this issue. Now, where did they get their precedents from? So they didn't really have much halachic precedents, and they resorted to interesting agadic comments in Midrash and in Gemara. So it goes, space pushes back to the North Pole, the North Pole pushes back to the first days of creation and to Yeshua's miracle with the sun. So it seems that at some point you end up with no halachic sources, and either some sort of creative interpretation, and Machlokus said about how to understand these supernatural phenomena that happened, and it all ends up a lot based on Svara. We'll see that a lot of the discourse is, well, logically speaking, this should be the halacha, but that's ridiculous, so it isn't. Or, but that's ridiculous, and it is. So a lot of it is based on that if I take a certain criteria for how to define day or night, or how to define a week, it comes out with a very strange outcome, and then the question is, do you accept it or do you reject it? So, what happens in the North Pole? Oh man, let's draw some stuff. Okay. Let's draw it over here. Okay, this is the sun. Okay, my sun is flat. We have flat earth society, now we have a flat sun society, I'm just starting it now. The reason my sun is flat is because at the end of the day, as far as we're concerned, since the sun could contain 1.3 million earths, so the sun rays do come to us pretty much parallel, not really, but as far as we experience them. So we're going to pretend the sun is flat, all good. Now we have this nice little planet called Earth. Apparently just turned into an egg shape. And as we know, Earth spins on its axis, but it is not. It's on a 23-degree angle. So let's say that that's more than 23 degrees, but it's a lot of...
You want to change
it? I'll change it. I'll change it. But I'm in the wrong one. I'm in the right one. No, this is bad. Yes. No, it's good. Okay. So this is good. Very good. Now, the Arctic Circle is at 66 degrees. I mean, it's defined as that because this is looking weird. Point being that since Earth is spinning on this axis, what happens is that if you get high enough, you do no longer have sunset. You no longer have sunset during the summer because basically the Earth is spinning like this, but this part is always exposed to the sun. Now, it does depend how far up you go in terms of how long this period continues for. Meaning, if you are exactly on the line of the Arctic Circle, you basically get once a year in the summer a day where there's no sunset, and once a day in the winter where there's no sunrise. Meaning, if you're standing right here, then there'll be one day a year where you'll have what's called the midnight sun, which is that the sun just doesn't set. You experience it as going around the sky. If you get all the way to the top, then you have basically 6 months of dark and 6 months of light, right? Because during the winter, then it'll be the opposite. This will be pointing. So then you basically have one sunrise and one sunset per year. And anywhere that you are in between, it varies. So there'll be places where there's a 1 month of daytime, a 1 month long day, the chulik. Now there are a bunch of countries here. We have the northern regions of Canada over here, above this line. We have a whole bunch of the northern regions of Russia. And we have the northern tip of some Scandinavian countries, Sweden and Norway. So people live there. A large, vast number of people live there and travel there. And Jews have asked the Shaila over the last few centuries as to what do you do when you go there. Maybe it's also to go there. Rav Moshe Shterubach paskens, not surprisingly, that unless you have a really, really good reason, it's also to go there. Because you'll be causing yourself to enter the Shaila of when you keep Shabbos. Maybe there is no Shabbos. Maybe you're pattering yourself from keeping Shabbos altogether. So unless you have a pretty good reason, don't go there. But first we have to discuss what are the potential issues. So what does the question all boil down to? It all boils down to, well, how do we define day and night? We usually have it quite cushy, us here, below the Arctic Circle, because we have sunrise and sunset. Sunrise and sunset, we always assume, is what defines day and night. When the sun rises, it becomes day. When the sun sets, it becomes night. Between the two of them, they make up 24 hours, but the length of each one varies depending on the season and depending on where you are in terms of your latitude. What happens when we have no sunrise and no sunset? So you really get three options. If you have to define when is day and when is night and how long it takes for the cycle of day and night together to move on, so you really have three options. One option is say the whole system falls apart. Our system, the Torah's halachic time is based on sunrise and sunset. You have no sunrise and sunset, at least not one that is daily. Then, meaning if you have a point in the year where there is no sunrise and sunset, either if it's one day, or if it's more than that 6 months, that time is not day nor night. It's not B'nai Shmashos either. By the way, if you do live right below the Arctic Circle in Sweden, for example, then you don't have any day in the summer where the sun doesn't set, but the sun only sets slightly below the horizon, so you have B'nai Shmashos all night. So you have sun during the day, and then when it comes time for sunset, the sun sets, but there's no Tisa Kochavim, so then you have day but no night. That's also complicated. So what do you do in terms of mitzvahs of the night? And there are a lot of mitzvahs of the night that you can do from Plaga Mincha. right? So you can have a Maariv, you can have a Shabbos and B'chulei, but mitzvahs that really need night, if there were to be such mitzvahs in the summer, so say Sfirah Somer and things, so then you're in trouble. That's a whole different headache. We'll leave that. But what happens when you have no sunrise and sunset? So you have three options. One option is to say time halachically falls apart. You need to have some sort of correlation between Earth rotating around its axis and sunrise and sunset. If you haven't got that, it's not day or night. If that's the case, then once you've gone above the Arctic Circle, let's for the sake of making it easy, go all the way to the top. So you have 6 months of light, 6 months of dark, but none of that is day, and none of that is light, and none of that is Sunday or Monday. You've basically parted yourself from all Zman Grama Mitzvos. That's what happens according to what I would claim is the most simple approach. And again, there are names for any one of these opinions. Rav Bleich, in his Contemporary Halachic Problems, sides with this option that you have transcended time. There is a way to transcend time, and that is by putting yourself in a place on Earth where there is no daily sunrise and sunset. So you are pater midaraisa from all Zman Grama Mitzvos. There's no Isur Tiki, there's Mutter, there's no Shabbos, there's no Mincha, there's nothing. Now the question is, but what about Midrabanan? What kind of life is that? Meaning you're allowed to live there in theory, or people might live there. So the problem is it's too late for Chazal to interfere, right? They're not around. And we don't have a body of people today who have the authority to generate a Derabanan mitzvah. So the question is there some sort of pre-existing Derabanan that you could import to here and say, at least do that? So again, all of the poskim that discuss this, they all make reference to a Gemara that talks about what happens if you just lose count of when Shabbos is. Gemara talks about someone who's walking in the desert and he loses count of when Shabbos is. Again, if you take away people's devices, they may easily lose count of what day it is. So what happens if you're walking in the desert? It must have been common enough for A, Chazal to discuss, and B, for them to generate the whole special halacha for it. So a person's walking in the desert, the Gemara says, and he doesn't know when Shabbos is, so what does he do? It says he counts 7 days, and he keeps Shabbos on the seventh day. Now, the chance that he's keeping the right day is, well, it's not exactly on the seventh, because it may depend on how much he does remember, but most likely he's keeping the wrong day. So the Gemara says that this is only really, meaning every day it's Safek Shabbos, Safek not Shabbos. He doesn't know. So really he has to keep Shabbos in terms of the Melachos every day, except for what he needs for Pikach Nefesh and to travel further. Because if we say that he can't travel further, then he'll be there forever. So every day it's Safek Shabbos, Safek not Shabbos, so he has to keep Shabbos to the extent that he can in terms of Melachos, except for what he needs to eat and to travel further. However, in order to not forget about the concept of a positive Shabbos, once a week he midrabanan does Kiddush Havdalah and Seudah Shabbos and the positive side of Shabbos just to remember Shabbos. So we have a concept of a person who is in a place where he doesn't know when Shabbos is, at least symbolically, but not symbolically, means making Kiddush and Havdalah. These are brachos that would usually be the Vatala. But Chazal made a takana de rabbanan. They should make these brachos and made not a Vatala, in order that the concept of Shabbos should not be totally forgotten from him. Now the question is, well, could we just take that and copy and paste it and stick it in the North Pole? So some posts can do. Some posts can do. One of the most famous and earliest sources that I mentioned before is the Gravitz. The Gravitz is not the first, but the one that's quoted most, because he's the only one that was quoted on a Perush that's printed on the Shulchan Aruch, so he got to be discussed most. But he said that yes, although Midoraisa person in the northern regions, at least at a point in time when there is no sunset, Midoraisa isn't chayv in Shabbos and Zmanim because it's not day or night. Therefore, it is not halachic Zman. But nonetheless, he should count and make Shabbos on the seventh day. Now, it's not pashtut at all, because there's a very clear difference between the Gemara's case, Shulchan Aruch's case, where a person just forgot when Shabbos is, and this case. When a person's living in a regular place and there is Shabbos on a certain day, but he never forgot, so we can say, well, there is a halachic Zman over here. You just don't remember when it is. So you should keep Shabbos as everyone else does in that region. You just don't know when. So the best you can do is symbolically. But now that you're in a place where Chazal didn't discuss, which is obviously was less common, if common at all, during Chazal's time that people were in those regions. So then Chazal's Gezeira or Takana was not made on that. It's not necessarily true, it's usually not true, that you can take a takan or gezer that Chazal made, and you can say, well, it originally wasn't applicable to a certain area, or certain place and time, or some case, but the reason behind it is the same. That doesn't really work that way. Not usually, so we really don't necessarily have basis to say that we can apply even the Derabban concept, that Rav Leif himself sides with, that therefore you end up in the north, in the, above the octave circle, doing nothing. There is no Shabbos, there are no Zmanim, you basically tatter yourself from all mitzvos asay that is Zman Grama. That sounds like a Chiddush, wait till we get to space. But that's one approach. The system falls apart when there is no sunrise and sunset. It stops being day or night or any day. But there are, of course, two other options, because two things are happening in a regular place. One is sunrise and sunset, but really, why does the sun rise and sunset? Well, of course, it doesn't. It's a borrowed term for spinning. But the reason we experience sunrise and sunset is because of the Earth's rotation. So the question is, which one of those is the halachic criteria that determines day or night? Meaning, is day when we see the sun and night when we don't see the sun? Or is it that, let me read that, is every cycle of light hours and dark hours, 24 hours called a day, or is it every time Earth completes a cycle of revolving around itself? Because when you get to the North Pole, you don't have day or night, you don't have light and dark, you just have light, but of course Earth is still spinning, and it's still taking you 24 hours to do that. So you will look up and you'll see the sun just doing circles above the horizon, but you can tell when a circle is completed. Any point in the sky that you look at, that you spend 24 hours looking at it, not recommended. So then, I don't know what else is to do up there, after having enough snow fights, you probably... So any point that you look at, let's say that we choose the most eastern point, so it's the equivalent of sunrise, but the sun is rising. If you look at there for 24 hours, the sun will get back to that point. So really, not in terms of day or night, but at least in terms of how do I know when it moves from Sunday to Monday, so you could claim that sunrise and sunset are not the main criteria, it's Earth spinning around itself. And then you won't necessarily be able to daven, because when is it day and when is it night? It's never day or night, but you can count days. So this will help you for Shabbos. So every time the Earth spins around itself and completes a cycle, that will be a day. And that's actually what most poskim say. The Ibits that I quoted, most poskim say that you do measure the days in the Northern Pole by cycles of 24 hours. But of course the question is what? But what day is it? So what day is it? So I know when today becomes tomorrow, and tomorrow becomes the day afterwards, but what day of the week is it? Is it Sunday or Monday? What is it? So here we have a bit of a split. We have a bunch of approaches within this idea that I'm going to measure Shabbos by it being the seventh time Earth has spun around itself, but when do I start counting? So when do you start counting? So of course everyone's hoping for a romantic answer, which is, well, you go by Israel, because really Kedushas Zman comes from Israel, so when you are in a place that has no time, you go by... There is an approach like that, meaning that the Kloisenberger Rebbe, the Divrei Yatziv, wrote one of the big shuvas. He mentioned it as an option. So a lot of this isn't psak, because everyone ends by saying, and this still needs further inquiries, so I'll leave it to someone else. But the Divrei Yatziv, the Kloisenberger Rebbe, in one suggestion says that, yes, since you don't have any specific time, locale on Earth to go by, so then go by Eretz Yisrael. So basically you would set your watch to Israel time, and then you would know what day it is, at least in terms of days. It doesn't say it in terms of davening, in terms of days. So that's one option. That would work for davening too, in theory, right? That would work for davening too, right? If I say that I go by Israel time, then I would work whenever it's sunrise in Israel, then I'll daven. Shachris, sunset in Israel, daven Maariv, you know, for me it's all light or all dark, and the same cycles of Shabbos will apply. That's one option, but again, it's made up. It's made up, right? It's made up. The other option of keeping Shabbos would, to me, make more sense, meaning basically all you need to do is calculate retroactively how many times Earth has spun around itself since the day of creation, right? It's pretty simple, no? Meaning to say, obviously, how do we know it's, why is it Shabbos over here on Shabbos? Because we trust our Masorah, / we can also calculate retroactively that this is still the 7-day cycle from Bereshis. So it's the same cycle of the same Earth, so really it should be the same day all the time. Whenever you arrive, whatever day of the week it was when you crossed above the Arctic Circle. It's the same day of the week there right now. There is one, this doesn't make any sense, and it's definitely a misunderstanding, but someone read it this way. There is the piece in the Ivets where he writes that you arrive in the Arctic Circle, and then you count 7 days and keep Shabbos, which makes no sense at all, because if you arrive on Tuesday, you'll have, for some reason, Rav Blyth read him to mean that, and he said, that's crazy. It's clearly not what he meant. He meant that you count 7 days whenever it was Sunday. But so that seems to be the most simple approach, that whenever it's the cycle of day. Now, the problem will be, though, that when the Shabbos come in, meaning, let's say that I know that I watch the sun do a circle and it gets to the... So I know that now I'm transitioning from five to Shabbos, but there's no Shkia or Tisachavim, so when the Shabbos come in. So I still need to make reference to some other place in the world. Or you can say, no, I mean, this is a way. You can say the seventh day Shabbos, but it never comes in. It just doesn't make sense. Right, the seventh day Shabbos, but it never comes in because there's no sunset and it never goes out. So it doesn't come in or go out. What's the problem? So then it's insignificant that it's the seventh day. You could say that, but then you belong in the first camp that I said, which is that since there's no sunrise and sunset, then Shabbos and Tfilos are irrelevant. Because even though you know that it's the seventh cycle since Bereishis and it's the day which should be Shabbos, it never comes in, never goes out because there's no time. But within this middle camp, the second camp, where we do want to say that it does depend on some Zman somewhere else in the world, so then you can say that you would, and that this will of course not work if you're actually up here, but anywhere else that you are, then you're of course in a time zone, and you can go all the way down to the equator and use that time, which would mean that everything is 6 o'clock. 6 a.m. is the beginning of the day, 6 p.m. is the end of the day, even though you're experiencing nothing of the sorts, but that's what the Ben Ish Chai says. The Ben Ish Chai in his Tshuva and Rav Pe'alim has a nice long Tshuva about this, and he says that you know what day of the week it is, because you're in a time zone, so you also know what time of day it is. So you will be davening throughout the summer, even though it's always day, based on as if you are the equator. And again, why would you say that? Why the equator? You could go anywhere between where you are on the equator and you get different times. It's a bit of a problem. Unclear. It's unclear. And that's why the third approach, and this seems to be the most popular approach, and this is on the Tiferet Yisrael, he says basically you keep the time zones of the place that you embarked from. And that really makes sense. Meaning, the last place that you were that had sunrise and sunset before you took that step or that journey to above and beyond that, that is the time zone that you should keep. What is fun about this approach? That you end up having a bunch of Jews up here keeping different days. He points that out and leaves it as, well, that's weird. A lot of these things will lead to weird things. Meaning, if one person comes come from different sides of the world, then you end up in that area. And Rav Blyth talks about imagining a future, you know, future colony of Jews up there keeping different days and then marrying, and what do the children do? And it's very complicated. If you think 3 and 6 hours is a problem, imagine that if, you know, my morning is your afternoon and we're neighbors. So but that seems to be what is the popular approach wherever you came from. Your climb should, you know, if I'm coming from the northern part of Sweden and I have my clock set to their time, then I go all the way to the north and I no longer have sunrise and sunset for a couple of months during the summer, but I'm still keeping that time because that is, but again, it's logical because that's the closest point to you in terms of that has a time zone, but it is crazy in terms of that you could be neighbors forever with a person who happened to take a different route and you'll have me, you know, midoraisa, or at least in the Ravon probably. Two different total time zones. So when they get to the northern pole, all time zones converge. It doesn't matter. You're just in trouble. Don't go there. There's a fascinating chiddush of Moshe Sternbuch. He says that during the summer in the northern region, it's always day, and there's only a split second of night in which you can't do anything. What does he say? He says that, of course, the sun is, again, from our point of view, the sun is circling above the horizon. When it gets to the easternmost point, that's the beginning of a new day. But since it wasn't dark, the transition from today to tomorrow went through a split second, so to speak, of darkness. So it's always day during the summer, and night is a split second. So basically, you could daven Shacharis and Mincha. Maariv is a problem, and it's not such a problem because you can daven Maariv from Plaga Mincha. But if you get to any mitzvah that requires nighttime, let's say Seder night, then you can't do it. Because you don't have, unless you can eat really fast. Right? We think it's a problem to eat within 2 minutes. So basically, the transition from day to day works, but it's never night. So what's the Shabbos going to look like? Basically, what's Shabbos going to look like? It's Friday. And then it gets late, but it's still day. And then you have that transitional point for Friday to Shabbos, that's your night. And then you have 12 hours of daytime. So Shabbos is 12 hours. That's fine, you have a 12-hour Shabbos once every week. And that's that approach. That's all within, make sure that we actually get to space. I mean, maybe not physically, but at least. That's pretty much the different approaches in terms of that. Now, there is a third option. There's a third option which sounds crazy, but it's out there. And there's one approach that supports this. There's a sefer called Or HaMeir, The Shining Light. Of course, you can guess what it's about. And he claims that sunrise and sunset is the real deal. I don't care how many times Earth is spinning around itself. One sunrise means one day, one sunset means one night. And therefore, if you are in the Northern Pole, you have a whole year's worth of one day, one night. Daven Shacharis, in the first day of the summer. And you're done until you daven Maariv with daven Shacharis in the first half of the summer, daven Mincha in the second half of the summer, and daven Maariv in the night. Everything is good. What about Shabbos? You'll have your own Shabbos once every 7 years. It's fantastic. Meaning you are in your own time zone, which has a... And your Shabbos will last?
A year.
A whole year. Pretty crazy. But again...
It's a pre-cook. Oh my God.
You have to eat, you know. Again, everyone who's saying all these approaches are all admitting that they have not that much to be based on, and therefore I doubt they would pass them. I don't think that if you were to actually pass in the Shiloh for me going, I don't think you'd say to me, you can go up there and for the first 6 years you can do Malach every day because it's Sheish Shemesh. I don't think you would say that, because you would say, well, I'm very concerned that maybe all the other poskim in the world are possibly right, and they all say that you still count the 24-hour cycles. But he says that, logically speaking, one could claim that if day and night are defined by light hours, sun above the horizon, sun below the horizon, it just happens to be that in most places in Earth, that also corresponds to the 24-hour cycle, but really the halachic criteria is sunrise and sunset, so you will get but this will really mess you up, by the way. So let's say you don't live up there, let's say you live in the northern part of Norway, where you have one chunk during the summer where there's a 2-month day. So now think about what's going to happen to your Shabbos. You're going to be totally messed up, meaning that 2 months will count as one day. Right? And then you have to continue counting. So if it was Tuesday when you entered that point, so if on Wednesday the sun didn't set, and then it stayed above the horizon for 2 months, so after 2 months, now it's Thursday. Right? It's a bit crazy. Anyway, you can imagine how difficult this is. It seems like that's why the thing that makes most sense is to say that the halachic system of Zmanim wasn't built for places in which the cycling of Earth at 24 hours and the sunrise sunset don't correspond at all, and the system just falls apart. If you rip apart the sunrise sunset from the revolutions of Earth, logically speaking, you get that there's no halachic zman, and the best will be the rabbanim. If you do insist on there being halachic zman midoraita, you end up with two choices that aren't amazing. One choice is that 6 months day, 6 months night, and the other choice is that you have to define each day 24 hours, and then it's very hard for you to decide when is day and when is night. It's either always day, or it's day or night based on something which you have to say is quite random, either the equator or where you came from. But the Seder, those are the three options. Now, clearly there aren't that many sources in Chazal for this, so the best they can do the poskim is quote all of these supernatural phenomena, or things that we don't even know how literally to take them, to try and define if it's light and dark or if it's revolution. So, we know that the sun was created on day... Yeah, fair, but there was Vayir Vayivoker 3 times before that, so how did it become a day? How did the day pass if there was no sun? There was no sun, there was no... So what do you see from here? That light and day. Light and dark, right? No, there was no light and dark. What do you see from here? That Earth spinning around itself is considered a day. So you don't need sunrise and sunset and light and dark to be considered a day. Earth spinning around itself and going back to the place that it was, even again, it's very hard to understand and to accept that these are proper, concrete halachic sources, because we can't really imagine from an astronomical point of view or out of science how there was really a point in time that there was Earth and it could possibly sustain life and it was spinning around itself, but there was no star that it was spinning around. It's a little bit hard to... So to whatever extent we can take those things to be somewhat a reflection of some physical reality with halachas, so you could say that. We also talk about during the Mabul, there's a machlokes, the Mabul took a year, and there's a machlokes in the Midrash if the solar system was functioning during that year. It's a bit of a strange machlokes, but Chazal argued in the Midrash, if the solar system was functioning, which means that according to one approach, everything was frozen, not frozen, but frozen as in that nothing was moving, and then it was, I guess, day in one side of the world for a year, night on the other side. And then there's another machlokes if that year counts or not, which will be an interesting question, because if you want to determine when Shemitah and when Yovel is, you will need to count from creation. And if that year doesn't count, that changes everything. So it seems to be that it's the same question. Anyway, unclear. A lot of poskim cite the Yoshua's miracle with the sunset in Givon. Chazal say that it was going to be Shabbos, and people didn't want to be Michal Shabbos, even though it's probably Mutter. So he froze the sun in order to, and it extended for an extra 24 hours. Well, did that day count or not count? So it was the day after, when the sun did set, after 36 hours, well, after another 24 hours, so was that then Shabbos? I mean, did they go home after the fake Shabbos and keep Shabbos, or did they just skip Shabbos? So these are all things that are pretty hard to accept as proper halachic sources because, right? You get the point. Anyway, that's on Earth. Now we leave Earth. What happens when we leave Earth? So I think the main point here that I think maybe a lot of people miss is that you can't just talk about time and space, because there are, I think, three different scenarios that we can be talking about. By the way, there's a website called How Many People Are There in Space Right Now? It's the name of the website, How Many People Are in Space Now? And it's a one-page website that has a number and the names. Currently, there are six people in space, of which one of them is on the list of Jewish astronauts. It's a female astronaut, something Meir, but if you look on the actual page, she's from an Iraqi Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, but there's currently someone who-ish is. But, so it's a good website to refer to how many people are in space right now. It's a very creative name website. So, there are really three different situations when you talk about keeping time in space. One is, let's start with the most extreme one. If you're, meaning what I mean, there are three different places you could be. I mean, there's an infinite number of places you could be in space, I assume. But there are three different situations you can be in space in terms of your relationship with Earth and the Sun. One is if you're just traveling, right? You're on the way to the moon, so it's taking you 4 days or so, and you're on the way to the moon, you're not orbiting Earth, and you're not really experiencing sunrises and sunsets. So then, it seems to me at least that there's no way to say there's any Doraisa halachic time over there. You're not experiencing Earth orbiting, of course, because you're not on Earth, and you're not experiencing sunrise and sunset, so you're outside of time. You're halachic outside of time. There doesn't seem to me to be any way to say that you're chayving mitzvot that are based on Zman in the scenario where you are not orbiting Earth and not experiencing sunrise and sunset. And here is the most fantastic Kiddush. I don't mean fantastic by you, that's exciting, although it is, but crazy. In 1970, early on, after the moon landing, there was a lot of Torah written in Torah journals, and a rabbi called Rav Ben Zion Fier, he wrote the following phenomenal chiddush. He wrote that since in space, Zman-based mitzvahs don't apply, no mitzvahs apply. Meaning Torah is a package deal, all or nothing. Torah was given for the inhabitants of Earth while they are on Earth, even though no one person can keep all the mitzvahs unless he's both a man and a woman and a kohen and a lazy and both lives in Israel and has already married and divorced and stolen and retired. But Torah as a whole, Taryag mitzvahs were given to Israel, and in principle they're all potentially shaykh on this planet, but they were not given outside of Earth because some of them can't be fulfilled by definition. So therefore, one can take a mission to space and eat whatever he wants and do whatever he wants. You can imagine some futuristic branch of orthodoxy offering holidays to space in which you just pop out, do whatever you want, and come back in. Needless to say, the Torah world did not respond to this kindly. By the way, he had a proof. Interesting proof. The Gemara Kiddushin talks about mitzvot that are different types, man grama, not man grama, and then there's mitzvot that are not tluyos baaretz and tluyos baaretz. So mitzvahs that are tluyos baaretz only in Israel. The mitzvahs that are not tluyos baaretz apply everywhere. How do we know? So the Gemara says, well, you might think they only apply in Israel, but the pasuk says, kol yamei, all the days that you are al ha'adama, all the days that you are on the land, the mitzvahs apply even outside of Israel. So he says, nu, so it is somewhere else. Meaning we needed a pasuk to teach us that kashrus applies outside of Israel, and the pasuk is al ha'adama. So doesn't that mean that if you find a step that's one further away, then, see, again, it's nice. I imagine that Chazal used, or the Pasuk used the term Al-Adama, just in terms of Israel versus Chutz-Arts. That doesn't mean that, but that was his argument, and not that I support it, at least not publicly, but I think it's an interesting argument, meaning Torah is a package deal and the system falls apart if there's no Zman. Of course, no one accepted that. So let's take that as an extreme case. I think that's an easy case to pass in. You're traveling in space, you're not experiencing day or night, and therefore there's no Zman in, then nothing. The other situation is if you're on a planet. So the moon's not a planet. The moon's a bad example because the moon doesn't have sunrise and sunset. The moon doesn't spin, and therefore, if you're on one side, it's always day. If you're on one side, it's always night. So let's forget that. But let's say you've settled on Mars, so you experience sunrise and sunset. The day is a bit longer than on Earth. It's a 25-hour approximately day. So in theory, I would say that it has the right, Mars becomes Earth. And therefore, day is day, night is night. How are we going to know when it's Shabbos? It's a tricky one. But from when? So I would say logically you would have to calculate which, you know, how many revolutions of Mars have there been since creation. No, I mean, unless you want to say, again, this gets to the same problem. Once, it's the same thing as the North Pole now, in theory, which is you know when the day changes, but you don't know how many to count, right? So logically speaking, at least to me, next time you visit Mars, I would urge you to calculate retroactively how many revolutions of Mars have there been. Now, it gets trickier when you go to other planets because Mars is pretty friendly, not in terms of everything, but in terms of... But if you get to Mercury, then the revolution is 1,408 hours. So that means that your days would be very, very long. And your nights would be very, very long. So if you were to claim that you experience sunrise and sunset and that defines it as day or night for you, then it would be way, way, way crazier than the North Pole. You basically have a 700-hour-long day and a 700-hour-long night in which, well, I guess technically you're not going to have that much time unless by then we advance other forms of technology to live that long. But basically you'd go up there and it would be just day forever for your lifetime or just night. You don't get that double chakras and that's it. You're in essence still part of yourself from all mitzvos once you do chakras. That's it. But there's a third option. A third option, which is the most common option, which is what basically all astronauts that are in space now are doing, which is they are orbiting Earth. And that makes things very complicated. And this is where most of the discussion is. Why is orbiting Earth more complicated? Because you are experiencing your own sunrise and sunset very frequently. The orbit of the space station around Earth is 90 minutes. So basically every 90 minutes you have sunrise and sunset. So are we going to go as far as saying, yes, that's your day? Your day is 90 minutes. Every 90 minutes you experience a day. Every seventh 90 minutes you have an hour and a half's worth of Shabbos. And of course, the classic joke about for every 90 minutes you have to daven Shabbos Mincha Maariv and do all the mitzvos. So this sounds impossible to say, but yes, of course, for every option in this topic there is an opinion. And there is an opinion that says this. Where are you, opinion? As a rabbi called Rav Shlush, Rav Shlush wrote an article very early on in one of the Torah journals after the moon landing, and he claims that yes, every time you complete an orbit around Earth, because you experience sunrise and sunset, that was a day. So this is crazy. You really have to keep a 90-minute Shabbos every... So within a regular Shabbos, so 24 hours, you will have several Shabboses. Interesting. It's crazy. But that's what he claims. And again, I can't say that there's any real flaw in that. Again, the flaw is that it's ridiculous. But is the claim it's ridiculous a halachic consideration? Usually it is when we end up passing like the thing. But that's his approach. And of course, again, what is he saying? It's parallel to the approach over there, which is, I don't care what Earth is doing and how many times it's cycling around itself. You experience sunrise and sunset, and that is the definition of day and night. So I don't care how short your day and night are. Just like if you live somewhere on Earth that's below the Arctic Circle and it's northern, and in the summer your night can be a 4-hour night. So this guy's night is 45 minutes, and his day is 45 minutes. And that will create, of course, a quite ridiculous situation where you'd have to keep on doing mitzvos in a cycle. Very unlikely they will accept that. So what else is there to do? So the other option is to say that it's the same as the case of traveling in space, which is, yeah, there's no Zman. Meaning, it's ridiculous to say that your sunrise and sunset, which is not relative to Earth, is day or night. So that's gone. You're not anywhere on Earth. So then that's gone. So you've parted yourself from all Zman Grama mitzvos. That's what I would opt for, meaning logically. There is a third option, which is very... And that's what Rav Halperin says. Rav Halperin from this Sefer, which I haven't referenced even once. But if you look it up, Rav Halperin says that... Well, he says the following. He says that He says that midoraisa, you don't have any zman grama mitzvos in such a case because you're not experiencing day or night halachically. However, he claims that you should still keep a 24-hour cycle of day and night and Shabbos like the person in the desert, which is a big chiddush. And how do you set your clock? So there's two options. One option is where you took off from. So you're at the space station, you're at the launching pad, you set your clock, you have your clock set, and that is going to be your time, even though you are not going to be above that place any longer. And but for Ilan Ramon, again, this is after the fact, was it? I think he actually, I don't remember if he told it to him or not, but he said that he can wait until, in the first orbit, the spaceship is above Israel, set his clock to Israel time, and then go with that. That's very interesting. That's a bit kiddish, because either you say there's no time, or you say there's time, and it depends on where you took off from. But he claimed that you can set your clock to the first place that you choose to once you pass over it. The last approach is fascinating. When is Shkia today? Let's say that it's when? Let's say that it's what? Okay, what happens if I'm on the 100th floor of the skyscraper in Yerushalayim? Is my Shkia, do I get the Shkia, is my Shkia 5 minutes later because I can see the sun longer? Isn't that great? You miss Mincha, you just take the elevator up. So the answer is no. The answer is that Shkia is based in every place based on
ground level,
that's the one. And even if you are in a very tall building and you in principle have see the ball of the sun longer, it doesn't matter. So what if you're flying above a place? So it's a big discussion at Polskim, but it seems like the accepted approach is that whatever place you happen to be above now, that is the Zmanim that you keep. So what happens if I'm just really far above a certain place, for example, in space? So Rav Bleich says, then you keep the Zmanim of that place. Now, this would be pretty easy if you were, let's say, some sort of, you know, cellular satellite that has a fixed place in its orbit around Earth. But if you're orbiting Earth at 90 minutes a time, then what happens is that you are going to be constantly going through different time zones. And that he claims that's the halacha. Basically, what he says is that you would have to keep Isra Malacha of Shabbos every time you are above a place that it's Shabbos. You will be basically traveling in and out of Shabbos constantly. So, you get the point? Every time you are currently in that moment for a few minutes above a place where it's Shabbos, it's Asu Biru Melacha. You leave that place, so it's Shabbos, not Shabbos, Shabbos, not Shabbos every half an hour or so. In terms of Kiddush and Avdallah, though, you won't be making Kiddush and Avdallah that many times because you're going in and out of the same Shabbos. Meaning, the Kiddush over here is that whereas the first approach was to say, it all depends on sunrise and sunset, and therefore forget Earth, it's light and dark. Here we're saying it all depends on Earth's cycle around the sun. So Earth determines when it's day and when it's night, and as long as you are still orbiting, you're still connected to Earth, you're just very high up in Earth, and therefore you keep Earth time. It just happens to be slightly inconvenient because you're constantly going in and out of time zones, and therefore... So basically, to summarize, I'm not that sure that we have an answer in terms of what to do when we go to space. You have the opinions ranging from Potter from all mitzvos to Chayev and mitzvos with Doraita, with it being extremely hard to calculate, to what seems most likely that Potter from mitzvos Doraita, but it will be Chayev and Derabanan, because it seems, you know what, I can't, it's not true. Everything's unclear, we don't know, but it is not far-fetched that in the near future we will have someone who's actually willing to ask this Shaila. It'll probably get diverse artists from Osir to go and be part of all mitzvos legamri, go and be part of Zman Grama, go and keep Shabbos every half hour, go and keep the kitza. So there's much more to be discussed about this. Shkoyach, the solar system. And,